This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Ooh.
I'm kind of busy.
Visit Carvana.com to finance your next car.
Financing subject to credit approval.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Elbow grease and a whole lot of love transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive entirely its own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
It's been a year since we launched the first season of Final Days on Earth, The Life and Death of Damien Hirt. I'm grateful to everyone who has listened and sent in information to help my reporting. Witnesses from Colorado, friends and family of Damien, and a band of true crime aficionados have all helped shape my understanding of Damien's final days on Earth and the complicated investigation that followed.
Nobody knew what was really going on. It felt like the school, the police, the community wasn't really telling us anything.
I said I would follow the story wherever it took me and report back when I had new information to share. I've been hard at work, sifting through listener-submitted tips, talking to experts, and chasing down promising clues.
And I have some pictures like that I have like in a Dropbox folder that I could share with you if you're interested in it.
There's been so much new information coming my way, I put together a special two-part episode. Today, you'll hear part one, and part two will come out on May 4th. Join me as we try to discover what happened to Damien Hirt and who, if anyone, is responsible for his death. From Cold Case Productions, this is Final Days on Earth, The Life and Death of Damien Hirt, Episode 14, New Leads, Part 1. I'm your host, Claire Sanima. Thanks for listening. The body of college wrestler Damien Hirt was found hanging from a tree 4 days after he went missing from a party at Western Colorado University in the spring of 2014. Gunnison police ruled it suicide, but Damien's family calls it foul play. Before we jump into the new leads, I want to touch on some key information from our last episode. In episode 13, we had just learned that before he disappeared, Damien told his mom and his RA that he planned to go hiking on Sunday, March 30th, 2014. This information was not included in the Gunnison Police Department's 187-page report on his case. This is Damien's mom, Jamie Hirt.
He said he was going to go hiking with somebody.
That's very interesting to me because I've often wondered, like many people, but what got him to that location at Cabin Creek? And it is a place where people go hiking and mountain biking and run trails and stuff. And now I'm wondering if that was a place where he had planned to meet people and it has some connection. That invitation to go hiking, that has some connection to where he was found. And man, would I love to know who he was going hiking with on Sunday. No one admitted to that. All those people that were interviewed.
I'm curious now since no one mentioned it.
Yeah, no one mentioned it, Jamie. Not a single person ever said we were supposed to go hiking Sunday. No one said that. No one.
Wow.
Damien's RA, Joe Montiano, told us that Cabin Creek was known by some Western students as a good hiking spot in early spring because it thawed out first.
Almost everybody, if they were coming from the Denver area, had to pass that area.
Okay.
I had hiked there before, like my freshman year.
These statements shed new light on Damien's final resting place, But they also brought up more questions, such as who did Damien have plans to go hiking with? And why wouldn't they have come forward during the investigation?
He told me that he was probably just going to do the usual, like maybe go for a hike because the weather is supposed to be nice that weekend. And
a lot of what you're saying actually is not in the police report. Like, your name's not in the police report. And it's like almost a 200-page police report, so I felt like it was pretty thorough, but as I talk to more people, I'm finding so much stuff that was left out.
In the first part of this episode, we'll talk to people related to Damien's case who contacted me after the season wrapped. On May 4th, in part 2, we'll hear from experts who weigh in on the forensics and criminology. There's a lot to cover, so let's get right to it. Perhaps the biggest mystery of all in Damien's case is the identity of the people hiker Linda Nienhauser saw with his body on Sunday, March 30th, 2014.
And I parked the car at the entrance to the Cabin Creek Trail or road, and there was a white full-size pickup with a topper parked right beside me, and then the black SUV was parked in front of the gate.
If you want a refresher on Linda's full statement, go back and listen to Episode 5, The Hiker, because in this episode, we're just going to hit the highlights.
There were two bicycles tied to that post when I was going in. They were there when I came out as well. And it looked like I had been, noticing the tracks on the snow of the two bikes, and so it looked like they went in there that morning ahead of me. And so I assumed that those two bikes came out of that white pickup.
In addition to seeing two vehicles at the scene on Sunday morning, Linda also mentioned a pair of bicycles secured to a post and fresh tire tracks in the snow. Linda noticed the bikes when she was going in and coming out from the trail. This gives an important timeline here to guide her statement. Whoever came in on those bicycles was out at Cabin Creek for at least 3 hours on Sunday morning. When Linda arrived at the scene, she noticed the bicycles tied to the post, but she didn't see a figure on the ridge yet. By the time she leaves, 3 hours later, the bicycles are still tied up to the post, but this time, she sees a figure crouching, using binoculars, and another person, who we now know as Damien Hurd, up on the ridge.
So I'm guessing I got back to the car about 2, somewhere in there, 1:30 maybe. For some reason, just glanced to the right of where the road was going, and on that ridge there, it looked like a person standing up, camouflage jacket, and I thought this person was looking my direction, and I thought I saw another individual squatted down to the right of that. So the whole time when I was walking, I was kind of, it just gave me the creeps that someone was looking at me through binoculars. So that's what I thought I saw.
There's always been a question of how many people Linda saw at Cabin Creek with Damien's body. The two vehicles would support the idea of at least two people, one being Damien and the other the driver of the white truck. But what about those two bicycles? If Damien died shortly after leaving City Market Fuel Center around 1:30 a.m., as Gunnison police maintain, then he didn't make those fresh bike tracks in the snow that Linda saw around 10 a.m. Sunday. The two bicycles seem to support the idea of two additional people, plus Damien, being at the scene on Sunday when Linda went on her hike. When I go through theories of Damien's case, the biggest difference between suicide and foul play is the number of people present. If Damien killed himself, the most likely scenario is that he was completely alone. And if someone harmed Damien, the most likely scenario is that multiple people were involved in the event. I've always wondered who was riding those bicycles that day at Cabin Creek. As we covered in previous episodes of this podcast, the two schools of thought for foul play were potential involvement of members of the track team or the wrestling team. Damien had physical and verbal altercations with members of both teams the night he disappeared. The cross-country team had practice on Sunday morning, and the two people involved in the altercation with Damien, freshman Anthony Rios and team captain Sam Vandeveld, were reportedly in attendance at the same time that Linda spotted the unidentified white truck and bicycles at Cabin Creek. The wrestlers, however, are unaccounted for in this time period. It was the off-season, and there was no practice on that Sunday morning. Because there were bikes spotted at Cabin Creek, it's worth noting that members of the track team were known for mountain biking around Gunnison, while the wrestlers were known for longboarding. I wondered if any of the wrestlers even owned bikes, so when a friend of theirs reached out on my website, I was eager to ask him about it.
Hey, JT, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Pretty good. Thanks for making the time to talk.
As you might recall, JT Pickert attended the wrestler's party the night Damien disappeared. A high school wrestler himself, JT knew several of the Western wrestlers well and considered them close friends in college. I thought he'd be a good person to ask about their transportation habits.
A lot of students at Western used bikes because if they lived off campus, that was much cheaper and almost sometimes faster to use than your car as long as it wasn't too cold out. Just because everything's pretty close in Gunnison, so, I mean, we'd always bike to parties, so.
In case you didn't catch that, JT said that it was a popular choice for Western students to bike to parties, and a lot of the students who lived off campus, like the wrestlers did, used bikes to get around.
But you don't have any specific memories of any riding bikes with anyone like Zach Shank or Kyle Pyatt or Elliot or anybody like that riding bikes?
No, I'm sure they all have bikes. I mean, some people have pretty nice bikes and some people, they'd all throw their bikes out in the middle and take whichever one out in the lawn and take whatever one that was closest.
Yeah.
So, I don't.
But you have like a general memory of there being like a bunch of bikes at the wrestler's house that people would rotate using?
I feel like there was. I felt like there was some bikes against that fence sometimes.
Okay.
But that could just be other party goers, you know?
Yeah, that's possible. That's possible. Yeah, there was a fence that they had in the alley, like a chain link fence.
Yeah.
For their backyard. I had heard a lot about longboards, you know, that they use longboards to get around. But bicycles,
yeah.
You know, that would just... It would be interesting to me to know if that was something that was pretty common. Because it sounds like they would just grab each other's longboards. They would borrow each other's longboards all the time. And
yeah.
You think maybe bicycles, too?
I think so, but it's been so long. I'm sorry.
The identity of the owners of the bicycles and the white truck remain one of the biggest mysteries in Damien's case. And I'm grateful for any information that gets us closer to an understanding of who they might belong to. Just the fact that JT remembered that many Western students biked to parties and Damien disappeared from a party is interesting to me.
I hadn't really thought about it being not only Colorado, but college, and that's an easy way to get around is to have a bike. A lot of people have bikes in college that don't have bikes other times in their life, so...
Yeah.
In addition to remembering two bicycles at Cabin Creek, another detail that Linda shared about the scene was the presence of the color pink on or around the Colorado license plate on the white truck.
We're trying to identify the person in the white truck.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to see it again in town, would you let me know?
You know, I've actually been looking for it. I watch, every time there's a white pickup, I look at the license plate to see if it's that pink thing.
In her mind, Linda associated the color pink with breast cancer awareness, and the Gunnison Police Department took her statement about, quote, a pink thing, to mean the truck contained an official breast cancer awareness license plate issued by the state of Colorado. But what if there was another explanation for the color pink?
Pink plate!
Nice.
Pink plate, where?
Pink plate!
Good job!
Multiple people contacted me to point out that Auto Nation, one of the largest used car dealerships in the country, uses a pink license plate holder on all their vehicles. Auto Nations are located across Colorado and surrounding states. Auto Nation's Drive Pink program for breast cancer awareness started in October 2013, about 6 months before Damien's disappearance and death. Linda described the vehicle at the scene next to Damien's car as an older model white truck with an extended cab and a camper shell. The only person that I'm aware of that was ever identified as having a vehicle matching that description was wrestling captain Kyle Pyatt, who drove a 2001 Dodge Ram extended cab. But Gunnison police said that his vehicle was ruled out because it did not have a registered breast cancer awareness license plate with the state of Colorado. In fact, Gunnison Police Detective Chris Danos told me in 2015 that they did not find a single vehicle connected to the case that matched every component of Linda's description. It should be noted that after Gary Hurd placed an ad in the Gunnison Country Times asking for information about the white truck seen at Cabin Creek, he received dozens of responses from Gunnison residents. This included tips about Kyle Pyatt's truck. One of those locals included photos of Kyle's truck, and it did not show a pink license plate holder at that time. In fact, there was no license plate holder at all. It's worth noting that although several witnesses said the truck previously had a camper shell affixed to the back, it was not on the vehicle in these photos. One of the most painful things in Damien's case is that despite Linda Nienhauser's willingness to speak with the Gunnison police and try to identify the white truck that she saw at the scene, the police never showed her a picture of Kyle Pyatt's truck. They didn't even identify any other similar vehicles in Gunnison for comparison or try to get closer on a possible make and model. Linda died in February 2021 from cancer. While we can't go back in time, I tried to do the next best thing. Using the license plate and VIN number, I was able to access the ownership history of the truck Kyle Pyatt was driving in April 2014. I found no record of the truck ever being sold by AutoNation, but I was struck by this line on their website about its Drive Pink program. Every car we sell and service helps to raise awareness with a pink plate. Drop by any AutoNation store to get your free pink plate. I was thinking that a vehicle had to be sold by AutoNation to get a Drive Pink license plate holder on it, but as it turns out, even getting your oil changed at an AutoNation service center could result in a pink plate. In the spring of 2022, I gave AutoNation a call to see what I could find out about their service records.
This call may be recorded.
Thank you for calling AutoNation USA, Denver 104.
We do more than sell and service vehicles. At AutoNation, we continue to place an iconic Drive Pink license plate frame on every vehicle sold or serviced at our stores. Our goal is to raise funds and awareness for cancer research all year long.
In my search for answers, I ended up speaking with service departments at three different AutoNations in Colorado.
Thank you for calling AutoNation Buick GMC US Service. This is Joey. How can I help you?
Hi, Joey. I'm trying to figure out if a vehicle has ever been serviced at an AutoNation before, and I have the VIN number and the license plate, and I was wondering if I could give that to you and you could tell me if it's in your system.
Yes, I can. Let's see here.
Joey couldn't find any record of that VIN number, so he referred me to another AutoNation location, who clued me in on a crucial fact about their bookkeeping.
AutoNation, I'm sorry to say, does not keep history beyond, like, 18 months.
Oh, okay.
So if it was here before then, but not since, they would have dropped it from our system.
Oh, wow, 18 months. That's pretty
short.
I had no idea it was that short.
Yeah, it is. We've got, I think we've got 16 stores here in the Denver Metro, and I just, I guess our computers just can't store that much information.
Since AutoNation only keeps records on file for 18 months, there doesn't appear to be a way to find out if the truck that Kyle Pyatt was driving in 2014 had recently been to an AutoNation service center. It's the kind of lead that police could have easily followed up on, if only they'd asked as part of their original investigation. There's a 6-month window between the start of the Drive Pink program and Linda's sighting of the so-called pink thing on the white truck's license plate. It should be noted that the closest AutoNation to Gunnison is over 100 miles away in Golden, Colorado, which is a suburb of Denver. That's a long way to go to visit a car dealership, though the time period does include winter break, when many Western students would have traveled to the Denver area. Kyle Pyatt, however, probably wasn't one of them, as he comes from a small town an hour west of Gunnison in the opposite direction of Denver, where there is no AutoNation. Considering how widespread breast cancer awareness efforts can be, I wanted to look into Gunnison-specific efforts, beginning in 2013, for any car-themed tie-ins. I found a program called Tough Enough to Wear Pink, which was sponsored by Wrangler and included a car magnet that was a large pink ribbon that looked like a rope. One of the top fundraisers for Tough Enough to Wear Pink is the Cattleman's Days Rodeo in Gunnison. According to a press release, the Gunnison Western community has raised close to $2 million to support the fight against breast cancer in their hometown. The theory that Gunnison police put forth about an officially registered breast cancer awareness plate being on the white truck was a dead end. As far as I know, they never checked alternate sources of the pink license plate, such as AutoNation sales and service records for vehicles matching Linda's description in the Gunnison area, or considered a possible connection to other local breast cancer awareness efforts like Tough Enough to Wear Pink. The fact that the only vehicle of interest in the case is Kyle Pyatt's truck is pretty outlandish. After all, we're talking about a very common vehicle, an older model white four-door truck with a camper shell. Surely authorities could come up with more than a single match in a town of nearly 6,000 people. It seems like yet another missed investigative opportunity in Damien's case. If you have any information about the owner of the bicycles or the white truck with a pink license plate accoutrement, we want to hear from you. Contact us securely at finaldaysonearth.com. There's one other item at the scene of Damien's death that has attracted a lot of listener feedback: the partially opened screwdriver set found on the passenger floorboard of Damien's SUV. As you may recall, the 31-piece specialized set was near Damien's disassembled cell phone, a Samsung Galaxy S2. As an intrepid listener first pointed out to me, you didn't actually need a screwdriver set to open this kind of phone, and Damien likely knew that. But an outsider, someone who had a different kind of phone, probably wasn't aware that the back just popped off with your thumb. On my website, I asked listeners to weigh in on where you could buy this screwdriver set in Gunnison. The brand Hyper Tough was visible in the police photos from the death scene.
Those screwdrivers, from the pictures on your website, I think their brand is Hyper Tough, is that correct?
I think so, yeah.
Here again is JT Pickert.
Okay, so the only place, I'm pretty sure that's a Walmart brand. They say the world's smallest Walmart is in Gunnison, so...
That's funny. Well, you're the second person to tell me that they thought that it was Walmart, so that's interesting. Yeah. I wish it wasn't some huge chain store that's going to be much harder to try to get into their inventory than if it was mom and pop, but the information itself is helpful, and now you're the second person to tell me that, so I think I'll try to see if I can possibly talk to them and see if they have their sales records from 2014, and if they would look for Hyper Tough 31-piece screwdriver set and tell me when the transactions were. That would be amazing.
Right.
And, you know, it could have been something that Damien bought back in Texas years ago, you know? We don't know. That's part of the hard part about
it. Well, it's weird that it's still in, like, that plastic case.
Yes.
We reached out to the Gunnison Walmart about their sales records from 2014, but they have not been able to locate any records from that far back. Hope springs eternal, and I'll follow up if I'm able to track down the records. We've spent a lot of time talking about the hiker who saw a white truck at the scene of Damien's death. But close listeners of this podcast will recall that there's actually another mystery vehicle, and another witness, from Cabin Creek.
And I remembered that I'd taken a drive on Monday, the 31st of March.
This is Gunnison resident Matt Marvel.
And I pulled into the Cabin Creek turnoff, and I witnessed two vehicles in that parking lot. It was about 10 o'clock in the morning.
As we discussed in previous episodes, Monday, March 31st, 2014, was the same day Damien was reportedly signed into two classes and his ID card was used in the cafeteria. For the full details of Matt Marvel's statement, go back and listen to episode 6, eyewitnesses. Around 10 a.m. Monday, Matt says he spotted two vehicles parked outside the gate at Cabin Creek. The first was either a two- or four-door sedan, dark in color, and the second he described as either a truck with a topper or an SUV. Gunnison Police Detective Chris Danos pressed the witness about the color.
A truck with a topper or an SUV, what color was it?
You know, if I had to say, it seems like it was like a maroon color, but I really don't know for sure.
The main point that initially stuck out to me about these vehicle descriptions was that neither of them seemed to match Damien's car, a black Saturn SUV with Texas license plates. But in September 2021, an entirely new tipster reached out to me with an observation of his own. I was shocked to hear that this source had crucial new information, but insisted I keep his identity a secret. He shared his real name and connection to the case with me, but would grant me an interview only if I agreed to protect his identity and distort his voice.
It's a super small town. Everyone kind of knows everybody around here.
For the sake of the podcast, we're going to call this witness Adam.
And I have some pictures like that that I have like in a Dropbox folder that I could share with you if you're interested in it.
That would be interesting to me.
Adam sent along a bevy of documentation about key players in Damien's case, including several of the wrestlers.
And they have been friends since they were like, you know, just Kiwi wrestlers. I mean, little kids.
One of those items was a photograph shared on a wrestler's social media account up in Gunnison.
I had actually come across a post of Chevy Tahoe or Suburban, I don't know, and it is maroon.
Are you serious?
Yeah, swear to God.
The vehicle that Matt Marvel described as a maroon SUV has never been identified. It remains a vehicle of interest in Damien's case as a possible witness in his disappearance, since it was at the scene of his death 2 days before police found his body. Along with the white truck, the maroon SUV's driver has never come forward to give a statement to police like Linda Nienhauser and Matt Marvel did. The photo of the maroon SUV that Adam shared with me was posted on another wrestler's social media page about 6 months before Damien's disappearance.
Now that's very interesting, and I think, you know, certainly the Gunnison police just wrote off the fact that Matt Marvel thinks he saw a maroon. You know, we were just like, whatever, that's crazy.
I thought that was kind of interesting.
Of all the cars for him to be driving, and that he would drive one that would match a description given by a witness at the death scene.
The photo did not include the license plate, so I can't confirm its owner. I'm purposely holding back the name that Adam provided in hopes that I can get independent confirmation from another listener of this podcast. If anyone has information about a Western wrestler who was driving a maroon SUV in April 2014, contact me securely at finaldaysonearth.com. I want to take you back to my conversation with former Western student and party attendee J.T. Pickert. As you might recall, JT spoke to Gunnison Police Detective Chris Danos back in 2014 when the case was still open.
Do you have any questions for me?
Will we publicly know what happened?
Yeah, when I...
When the investigation's all over?
Sure, absolutely. Okay.
As it turns out, the lack of information about Damien's case was an even bigger problem for JT than it was for me.
As a student at Western, we got that email that Damien was missing or whatever. And then, obviously, we later found out that he had died. And then I got interviewed. And then after that, I heard nothing. Like, nothing from the police, nothing from the school. Oh, I never saw anything, you know, saying, oh, we made a final. This is what we are calling it. So
So you didn't even realize that it had officially been ruled a suicide?
Right, no, not until your podcast. So I, you know, years and years, just I wonder what's going on with that.
Wow.
JT tried to be proactive to get others involved in the investigation.
I'd actually written into other podcasts saying, hey, will you look into this? Like,
really?
I'm sure you've heard of Crime Junkie.
Yes.
My wife got me into a bunch of true crime podcasts. So, I mean, that's probably the reason we're talking right now.
That's really interesting to me that the word was not well publicized, that the case had been closed and ruled a suicide. At least, you know, for you to have found, that's interesting.
Yeah, how long was that? Wasn't it quite a long time till it was...
Oh, yeah, yeah, it would have been closed? The next semester, so it was October. So he died in April, and then, you know, the semester ended the summer, and the fall semester started with it still unsolved. And then it was like late October that they arrested Curtis Markham and Preston Claybrook. In very short order after arresting them, they said case closed, non-criminal, suicide.
As we covered in episode 9, The Arrest, Curtis Markham and Preston Claybrook were charged in connection with selling Damien LSD before his death. JT said one of the reasons why he contacted me about Damien's case was that he wanted to respond to the suspicions against the wrestling team.
Yeah, one of the things, one of the other people that you interviewed said everybody at Western knew it was a wrestling team and all that, and I have to disagree. Maybe I have a different opinion on that just because I am friends with some of the wrestling team, but... I felt like it was just confusion on campus. It was, nobody knew what was really going on. It felt like the school, the police, the community wasn't really telling us anything. So, I don't know. Sure, there was probably some suspicion throughout the school on the wrestling team, but as a whole, I didn't feel that way.
JT said that more than anything, he felt sympathy for Damien's friends and teammates.
Just to have sympathy for Kyle and Zach and all those other guys who are really getting looked at, especially if they, I feel like they didn't do anything wrong, but,
yeah,
you know, just knowing those guys and how I feel about them and feel like, oh, I could never see them doing that, but that's what everybody says.
As I put myself in their shoes, you know, what if my friend passed away under suspicious circumstances and I was one of the last people to be seen with him and people felt like I was hiding something or that I was involved somehow or, you know, had some kind of culpability, you know? I mean, that would be a living nightmare, you know? And, I mean, so much of that is out of their control. They were on the wrestling team with him. It was their house. The party was held there. He, you know, was there. So facts of the case are, you know, that he got into an argument with Kyle Pyatt, that Kyle Pyatt had him in some type of hold around his neck. That's, you know, that's not really in dispute. It's hard to deal with.
That's for you, though.
JT said the idea of Damien and Kyle being in a physical altercation with a chokehold isn't that unusual for wrestlers.
My dad was my high school wrestling coach. We were always, you know, grabbing onto each other and putting each other in, you know, head and arms, which is kind of what it sounds like is what he was in. So, I mean, that's what I guess it was under a an argument, but that's kind of just who wrestlers are, especially with teammates or people close with them.
So just the idea of it, you know, as an outsider, it's pretty alarming to hear someone being described as being dragged around the house by their neck and then they end up dying, you know, with a neck injury, right? And so, you know, it feels like, gosh, could these things, is that a coincidence or are these connected?
I'm always on Facebook friends with Zach and Kyle, and I keep mentioning them just because that's who comes to mind. But, you know, Zach was very involved, invested. He and Damien, I think, have grown pretty close.
Yeah.
You know, Zach, after Damien passed, got a tattoo for him in memory of him.
Zach's tattoo says, "Be Heard," a play on Damien's last name and one of his favorite sayings. Zach's tattoo might not be the only life decision influenced by Damien's death. In January 2020, Zach started working in law enforcement for the Gunnison County Sheriff's Office. Kyle Pyatt, meanwhile, is a high school wrestling coach in his hometown. Kyle Pyatt and Zach Shank declined my repeated requests to be interviewed for this podcast, but my offer to speak with them still stands. Guys, if you're willing to talk, you know how to reach me.
Looking back with hindsight, is there anything that happened at that party that sticks out now that you didn't think about then? Or, I don't know, I guess I'm just wondering with the benefit of time if there's anything else that has come in your mind about that party.
Yeah, to the best of my memory, I arrived later than most of the altercations, I guess.
Yeah.
And I hadn't even heard of those going on until later. So, I mean, I did see Damien at the party for a little while, but, you know, it didn't seem at that point that he was having issues with anybody.
And did you ever hear anything more about the oxygen deprivation mask? I know that was something that you had mentioned along with several other people as being out in the party, used by people. Did that ever come up? Did people talk about that after Damien went missing?
No, not at all. Not that I remember or heard of. I think the police asked me about it, but all I can remember is they were just, you know, messing around with it at the party. I was actually one of the last ones at the party. I mean, I think it was like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning by the time I left.
I guess I was just curious if anyone had seen that oxygen deprivation mask again. If anyone, you know, I didn't.
I thought it was at the part, like, I thought it was there really, really late at night. I thought it was, I don't even know if it came out until most people were gone, you know? Right. So it was just really, it was, from my best memory, it was there really late, but after that, no, I never saw it. So I don't know if it was ever collected as evidence or...
Yeah, you know, if it was collected as evidence, it was not listed in the police log of evidence. And I've always been curious what happened to that mask, and if it was, you know, I wish it had been collected and tested, just because, you know, like I said in the podcast, when you have someone who attends a party die of asphyxiation, and then you have an oxygen deprivation mask that deprives you of oxygen, you know, it seems to me, just being thorough, that would be a device that you would want to know did the victim wear. You know, and whenever I've talked to other experts, you know, apart from the Gunnison Police Department, they've all been curious about that oxygen deprivation mask. You know, I think that's just one of those loose ends that to me, you know, has piqued my interest more and more, you know, as I've talked to other people, and they've felt like if there was some kind of foul play, potentially that mask can't be ruled out by the physical evidence. I really believed whenever I started this podcast and as I've been doing it that the answers are out there and there's enough information and enough people that were there that we can hopefully rule some things out and get to a place where we feel more comfortable with saying what happened to Damien. I mean, your words, just so simply, whenever you said to Detective Danos, will we ever publicly know what happened? That's where I'm at. I just want to know what happened to him. If it's a suicide and we can explain how, you know, his ID card registered in the cafeteria, how his professors gave email confirmation that he was in class, if we can explain with as much technology as we have and as much things as people, you know, keep on their phone and put on social media, I really felt like someone was going to come forward and say, you know what, I signed him into class because I realized he was late and I didn't want him to get counted absent. And then he never showed up. And I really thought, right, like, he's going to be here any minute. And he didn't. And then I'd already signed him in, so I wasn't going to go to the professor and be like, I signed my friend in. You know, I'm not going to tell him myself, right? And that would have made sense to me. Like, I would have understood that. And if someone said, like, oh, I, you know, yeah, Damien's ID card, you know, his it was broken, so he was always saying the student ID number in line at the cafeteria, and I remembered it, and I didn't have any money left on my meal plan, and I used it to buy a hamburger, you know, I would understand that. Like, I could see doing that, you know? But the fact that no one has ever said anything, simple explanations, like, those are so simple. You know, and to me, it's just hard for me to wrap my head around those events not being explained, unless someone has something to hide, unless there's a reason why they can't say that it was them.
I mean, it was easy to remember student ID, so the whole cafeteria thing doesn't surprise me. Somebody's maybe using his lunch card or whatever. That'd be really easy to do. So
yeah, I just wonder why they wouldn't have said, hey, it was me, I did it, especially as this big stink kept coming out. Mm-hmm. And just be like, look, I had no idea there was anything wrong with him. I've done it before. He did it to me. You know, like, we did this to each other. And it's not some crazy conspiracy. I just, you know, I just used his card because I was hungry. You know, like, that would have made so much more sense to me to have come out, you know, the day that his body was found, before there was even any suggestion of foul play. And, I mean, that's the kind of thing where the day his body was found, so many people called into the police department, including Lyndon Ehrenhauser, and said, hey, this happened, and I didn't know it was significant at the time, but now I just found out that there's a person who's died, and so I want to tell you. I could understand an innocent reason, and then, oh, they've waited this long, and now there's all this scrutiny, and, you know, they feel like that they...
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
It would be misunderstood, and that's why they've never come forward, but... to me, the silence is the most disturbing part about it.
I still believe the answers are out there and that we are closer than ever before to discovering the full story on what happened to Damien.
Well, thanks for doing the podcast. It seems like every 6 months or a couple of years, I think, and like, whatever happened, there were just so many questions that I feel like you didn't answer. So I appreciate it.
Yo, next round is about to start. You ready?
Yeah, just shopping for a car in Carvana.
For real?
Yeah, Carvana makes it super convenient to shop whenever, wherever.
For real? That's a ton of car options.
Yep, and these are all within my price range.
For really real? You can afford that?
Yeah, with Carvana. And boom, just like that, I'm getting it delivered in a couple days.
For really, really real? You just bought a car.
For real, and you just lost my turn.
Visit Carvana.com to shop for thousands of vehicles under $20,000.
That's all for now, but I'll be back on May 4th with episode 15, New Leads, Part 2.
The forensic pathologist in particular is the patient's advocate. We're the decedent's advocate. We want to get the truth out. We want to know what happened to the person. They are talking to us through the scene, through their body, through the examination, through the autopsy, and so it's very important to get it right. You know, we want to hear them clearly.
Final Days on Earth is recorded in Dallas, Texas for Cold Case Productions in partnership with Podcast One and Live by Live. Each episode is written, reported, and produced by me, Claire Sanima. Original theme music composed and performed by Riley Simmons. Songs licensed from PremiumBeat.com are Bending Truth and A Thin Line. Editorial consultant is Lucy Scott of lucymedia.com. Additional production help from Amber Robinson, Janice Sue, and Elise Webb.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Elbow grease and a whole lot of love transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive entirely its own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Executive producers are Sharon Richards and me, Claire Sanimal. Special thanks to J.T. Pickert, the kind folks at AutoNations across Denver, and my secret source, codename Adam, for talking to me in this episode.